Welcome to Vermont Favorites on WBTV LP Burlington 99.3. I'm Adam Rabin. Each week I talk with makers, doers, artists, and performers about their unique journeys and what they love about living in Vermont. My guest today is a Jill of all trades when it comes to the arts. She's a musician, a dancer, and an actor. Some might call that a triple threat, but if you met her, you wouldn't dare sell her short like that. Please welcome Vermont favorite Dawn Cherie McKenzie.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
How are you doing today?
Not bad. Actually pretty perky.
Perky. Yeah. Not bad for Sunday morning.
Sunday morning post whiskey.
Tis the season. So you, let's just start at the top. You were born not around here. You're from the other side of the country.
Yeah, I'm from Seattle.
Seattle.
Yeah. Washington.
What was life like growing up in Seattle?
Seattle is a really cool place. It's when I was growing up and back in the day, it was like a really large small town. And our neighborhood, we knew all the neighbors for like a 6-block radius, and as kids were always outdoors running around like crazy folk, and we all knew each other in the neighborhood, and it was a good place to grow up. Like, it's very green, and there's a lot of water. There is some cool music that eventually like came out of Seattle, but there was cool music there before, like,
you know, even before the whole grunge explosion.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
So you grew up, I guess, in the 80s. You remember, we'll start there. That you remember the 80s in Seattle, which
I
was
do.
Before. What was popping back then over there?
Well, I was a teenager, like a tween in the 80s, I guess. In the early 80s. And what was popping back then was a place called Skate King. Is pretty much all we did.
But roller skating?
Roller skating, I know. Yeah. Like,
well, that's where you find the latest and biggest hits, was at the roller rink.
Well, yeah. That's where you kind of find your groove. Yeah. And I'd heard some music that I didn't get to hear, you know, like around my house was a completely different scene than when you got to Skate King, and you could hear like the Bee Gees and stuff like that, which, you know,
I remember that. Yeah.
Which was,
well, what was happening around your house then? What were you listening to at home?
Okay. So the Parentals had their loves, which was, you know, my mom was really loved Teddy Pendergrass and, you know, Marvin Gaye and, God, it's like, you know, like right off the top of my head, there's just all of these lovely soul artists that you don't hear a lot of them now, but like the Staples Singers, Gloria Gaynor, and like
awesome.
There's like just all of these great things that came from my mom and dad's folks. And then there was my grandparents who liked country.
Did they live with you?
They didn't live with us, but they lived near. Like, gotcha. I could walk to my grandma's house, you know, within a good an hour or so. I could walk to grandma's. And so
nice.
She liked country, and she liked Nat King Cole. And she liked, so, you know, there was a lot of different things. But the rock and roll things were stuff that I had discovered kind of on my own. That was not
right.
Actually a staple at our house.
It's definitely that kind of came up, the sounds that came up between our generations. Because I'm guessing our parents are around the same the same age. There was a lot of, I remember a lot of, a fair amount of Nat King Cole around my house.
Mm-hmm.
And classical and yeah, a little bit of country, not too much.
Oh yeah, I love classical music.
Excellent.
And country.
So you were listening to that kind of music growing up, and was the arts, you know, because you're, you know, you sing and you've done theater and dance, did that come from your upbringing, or was that like rock and roll, something that you found on your own?
I think it's always sort of been there, because I was definitely a goofball kid and kind of a loner. And so
were you an only child?
Oh, no. There were two of us. I have an older sister.
Okay.
And we were, we're very, very different. My sister is very, she's really, really super smart and really like, just, she's brilliant. I love her. And, but she was all about the books and all about the study, and everything was very like, she had her thing. And then there was dun, dun,
then
dun.
You.
Me.
Yeah.
I used to like to play dress up and like do different things. And I was kind of into sports. Really wasn't into playing with dolls unless I could shave their heads.
Nice.
But anywho,
we're just going to let that one,
just
let that one hang there.
Just wrap your head around.
Yeah.
there may be an indication of a problem there. I don't know. So like I was always singing something or always, you know, play acting or, drawing. I love to draw things. And dancing sort of came later, but because of that, the decision that I made a little later in life to just like go for things that I love versus what made sense to everyone, because my family has a very practical side and the arts were pleasant enough, but that's not where you went. So
right.
I followed the practical first and for the first couple 20 years of my life, and then made a decision that, you know what, that's not, I need to be happy. So anyway.
Right. But still you kind of hung on to that, because I just happen to know that your day job is a very practical kind of.
It is.
Very practical kind of gig that affords you the freedom to explore stuff on the side.
Truly.
Like we all have day jobs. I mean,
Truly. Yeah. Yeah. And I like to eat.
Yeah.
This is how I stay round.
Yeah. There are about three or four people making a living, you know, solely by music.
Exactly. And
yeah.
I'm not one of those. Not yet.
But so the real confounding thing is, ever since you told me, and I've known for a little while, but I'm always scratching my head about how you got from the practical upbringing, but always wanting to play act and get into music and dance and theater, to what you did. You were what, in the Army, Navy?
Oh yeah, I was in the Army.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you transit? What happened there?
So this has been one long, arduous journey.
Yeah.
That is not easily explained, and it is not linear. I had a conversation with a couple of my aunties who were telling me that basically you'd never make it in the armed forces. Like you wouldn't last 5 seconds. And so
sound like they were daring you.
It did sound like a dare. And in fact, I was like, I will show them. So joined up four
yeah.
years. And it was the stupidest thing that, I mean, it was the stupidest reason to join, but
right.
No regrets. I'm a person that doesn't really believe in regrets. So
yeah, I'm sure you got something out of it.
I actually did. I found out I was a lot stronger than I knew I was. I found out that I was able to, that I didn't want to be a part of what's the word I'm looking for? I always end up stuttering on things because I think in pictures and not in words.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to be one of a number.
Gotcha.
You know, like it was like I discovered that really, you know, I'm an individual.
Yeah.
I'm a, you know,
large groups of people tend to scare me also.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Where, you know, and especially when we have to be cookie cutters.
And you really need to be a cookie cutter in the Army.
I'm not a cookie cutter.
So you were in for 4 years?
I was in for 4 years.
And
I went full-time.
It's like full-time, four
mm-hmm.
years. Did you go anywhere? Were you just stateside?
I was stateside.
Yeah.
I was stationed in Georgia. I was in Virginia for a little bit, but then I was in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, that's opposite land as far as like coming from Seattle to... Fort Benning, Georgia. And I met some really cool people in the Army that we are still friends to this day. And
excellent.
There was beer involved.
So it couldn't have been that bad.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I brought a 12-pack to, I heard music in the barracks and went to the PX and brought a 12-pack just to say hey and met some of the coolest people I know.
Make some friends.
I did make friends. It was awesome.
Cool. What else do you think you took from your time? I guess in part what you wanted to do, but yeah, also what you didn't want to do. But did the discipline, the what do you call it, the regimented day?
You know, it's funny. I don't mind regiment. And like mm-hmm. we were talking a little bit earlier, and I was telling you that there's a side of me that needs all the ducks in a row. And yeah. I'm still like that. There's a part of me that actually seeks regiment, that needs everything to line up and make sense. And in my work life, I'm like that. But then there has to be a balance. You know, there's
right.
there can't be too much of one or the other, because if I'm completely spontaneous all the time, I feel untethered, right. and that's dangerous and that's scary. But if there's too much regiment, then I feel suffocated. So,
yeah, like for sure. With the arts, with music, you know, you want to be able to express yourself, but you still got to go along with, it's still a discipline. It's still a craft.
Totally.
To refine and rehearse.
Totally.
Excellent. And so how did you get into the music and dance?
Okay, so once again, this is not a linear process, and
never is.
I didn't mean to turn this into a therapy session, but since you're here,
tell me about how does that make you feel?
So, when I first moved here, I moved here in 2009. I was just looking for. I wanted to paint. More like I was getting back into my painting on canvas kind of things, and I was bored with all the things that I could do, and I was getting to the point where I was frustrated and just creating black canvases, you know, because instead of starting with a white canvas, I start with a dark one and pull shapes out of the dark, and that's like one of my favorite things to do. And I couldn't pull any shapes out, and I was really, really frustrated. And then I got this little flyer in the mail from the Flynn, and I didn't know anybody here either yet. So gotcha. I was still new in town. It was everything was, as with any transition, it's all up in the air, and we're still sort of living out of boxes. And I got this flyer from the Flynn, and it was advertised a class called Acting for Bashful Beginners. And I thought, well, yeah, that, you know, that will give me some new experiences to draw from, because that's what I was thinking, is I need some new blood, you know, so right. let's really morbid, yeah. let's open another vein is basically what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So I, you know, got my money in and sent my money in, and as soon as I did that and, you know, like sent off the form and the fee, then I started to panic. And I was like, oh my God, I can't do this. What am I thinking? Like, what? Oh my God, I can't do it. I can't. And I'm like,
And this is all before the first class.
This is all before the first yeah. class. And yeah. I completely freaked out. And then my inner accountant kicked in and was like, we've spent the money. So you're gonna go to one class at least. Yep. And I went, and I loved it. I absolutely yeah. loved it. I mean, we had a really, really great teacher whose name is Robin Fawcett. She is so cool. Yeah. And she introduced us to our inner fool, right? And so I suddenly had permission to be all the dorky things that I've never been able to do, because it just wasn't practical or proper or ladylike or... Because, you know, that worked out.
Yeah. All the dumb reasons that you hear.
Yeah. So that was the start of all of this, where I started just learning how to say yes to myself. And it felt good. It felt like this is what I need to be doing.
And this wasn't until 2009.
2009, right?
Yeah.
So all that time in between, I had been making my life make sense for everybody else and chasing things that that I was supposed to, and I'm saying that with quotation marks on my fingers, but I was supposed to.
Right.
You know. And yeah, it was, it felt very, very different. I felt less trapped and I felt less, I don't know. I felt more authentic in my fool than I did in my, I'm looking like an adult today.
Yeah. that's what I've been learning as an adult more and more, is that it's all a grand illusion. It's all a big trick. And kids don't realize that we have no idea. This is going out on the radio, so I think I've just blown our cover.
Right.
But all kids out there, just so you know, we have no idea what we're doing.
No. Nope.
Yeah, none of us. And we're still figuring it out. And whether you're in your 30s or your 40s, it's not too late to either pick up painting or decide to start interviewing people.
Totally.
At your community radio station. Because you were talking about, you know, well, I already sent in my money, I already signed up. That's like very similar to what I felt when I signed up to do this show.
Yep.
I was like, yeah, I want to interview people. I want to, you know, I haven't done this before. You know, I've always done that other thing or that other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. But this thing just really appeals to me. And then I did one and I was like, oh my God. What have I done? Now I'm in for it. And yeah, just, you know, spent like days and days going, oh my God, I just have to stop everything. This is wrong. And now I'm past it.
Yeah.
You get past it. You get past the crippling self-doubt.
Yeah.
And then you start enjoying it little by little.
Yeah.
Even if it's cautiously.
Yeah.
So 2009, you moved to Vermont. Why did you move to Vermont, all the way from the other side of the country?
Actually.
Yeah.
In my same nonlinear fashion. I had moved to Vermont before that, and then my husband and I moved to Florida for a little bit.
I didn't know that.
Yes. We lived in Bradenton, Florida, which is right now being threatened by Irma, which is really scary because we know some really good people that are still down there, but they've checked in safe. So we lived in Bradenton for 5 years, and it as nice as it was, you know, the little community that we built, both of us really just wanted to be back up north. And I really liked Vermont. Vermont is beautiful, and she shows herself off nicely, you know, season to season.
She's not shy.
She is not shy.
No. Well, what brought you over to Vermont in the first place, the first time you came?
I followed a guy.
Ha ha.
And that is my current spouse.
Okay, so it stuck.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah, he had some magic. He had some magic in the can, and it pulled me from all across the country. He's just a really amazing guy.
I've met him.
You have.
I can't deny it. So in addition to picking up painting when you first got here, and we will get to the music and the dance, but so you just to reiterate, you really weren't doing any of this up until you came to Vermont, right? Or a little bit?
Little bits here and there. I mean, I feel like it's always been in me. And so my best friend says, you don't do art, you are art.
Yeah.
And so you bleed it, whether you try to tamp it down or, you know, tuck it or, you know, put it in a closet or whatever, something in you is going to express. And so I would paint little things here and there, because there are things that I painted while I was in Florida. We got a chance to visit New Orleans before Katrina, ironically talking about hurricanes. And I painted, there's a painting sitting in my basement of what I felt walking around the city of New Orleans. I felt like it was beautiful and haunted, and it had so much history, but it called to me. And so that's on canvas. So it's, I mean, all of these things have always been there. It took me to be in a place where I had access to explore them before they, you know, just poured out of me. They trickle out.
Was it a physical place that you had to get to?
Well, physically, Sorry, that was, I had a real cool answer all set up to a question like that, and it just, I can't think. But, I don't think it was a physical place, I just needed to be someplace that allowed me to breathe long enough to figure out what I wanted, if that makes sense.
Completely.
And for me, Vermont ended up being that place.
Yeah.
You know,
what was it about Vermont? Not that I don't know, and you know, because I live here and I do that, but what was it to you?
I'm an odd duck. I am definitely a very strange bird. And I am a woman of color in a very white place. So I stand out. Do you know what I mean?
And I do.
I can't hide.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where when you realize there's no place to hide, you either figure out how to dig deeper and bury yourself, or you get bolder. And I chose the latter. I got bolder. And it's like, no. I guess if you're going to see me, you're going to see me. You're going to see me in all of my odd costumes, because I don't dress like anybody else. I'm not a cookie cutter.
As long as the spotlight's on.
Well, I mean, and I don't...
May as well put on a show.
And I don't even really care about the spotlight so much. It's just I don't want to hide. I don't have the energy to seek to fit in so much. I have,
takes more energy, doesn't it?
It really does. And I love Vermonters for exactly who they are. I really do. I think that it's a beautiful place with a lot of beautiful people, and they're very authentic in themselves, and it makes me want to be authentic. And my authenticity is just strange and sometimes over the top, and sometimes, you know, well, you know me.
Yeah. You don't hear me arguing. Yeah.
Like, stop me when I get to something untrue.
Every episode I have four questions.
Okay.
Favorite Vermont stuff for all my guests. So on that note, I'm going to ask you one, maybe two.
Okay.
Your favorite Vermont place.
There's a good handful.
Yeah.
Do I need to pick one?
Pick one or two.
One or two. Okay. So I spend a lot of time at Red Rocks. Well, especially when my dog was alive, like I'm walking around in there. I really like it. I really like being at the little park, and that it's so close to our house, and it's just like a little wonderland in there.
It really is.
It's really cool.
I can't tell you how many times I've walked around there, or my wife and I have walked around there, and I can't also tell you how many times I've gotten lost.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's not a huge park, but I kind of purposely get lost in there.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'm like, oh boy, now I have no idea where I am. So I'll take out my phone for my GPS.
Yeah.
But it's so fun to just wander and wander. And next thing you know, you're like, hang on, where's the parking lot?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great answer.
I really... 'Cause
it, yeah.
I really like that place. It's cool.
Yeah.
My other spot, I guess, is I don't know. I really like being on Church Street at different times of the year outside Church Street in Burlington. It's really cool. But I'm also most familiar with that because, you know,
we're Burlingtonians.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, there's all sorts of, I have a lot of favorite places here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard not to.
Well, you spent some time, you've done some shows down in Rutland.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Wilson Castle? You've done some stuff.
Yeah. Wilson Castle's another favorite spot.
Yeah. I haven't been there. I know you guys have done a few shows there and I keep missing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta get down there, Adam.
I do. but back to exploring the arts up here.
Yeah.
So we're not even into the music yet, which is blowing my mind because you have done so much. you did some acting with the Vermont Stage Company.
I did the Vermont Stage Company and also like other small films around.
Right.
So I've been in, I prefer film to like stage. Film is a lot more forgiving and there's a lot more takes and
right.
You get, but acting in general is really cool because you kind of get to slip on somebody else and you suddenly have this permission. Like, I like playing a villain because it's so far from my soft-hearted self.
Is it, though? Is it?
What do you mean, Adam?
Well, you're pulling it from somewhere, right? You're pulling this evil from somewhere.
Somewhere, I'm an evil being. I don't know. Yeah. Worth exploring.
Well, we'll talk about that in another session.
Thanks. I won't say that there's a bus full of explosives someplace. Anyway, sorry.
You showed me how to pronounce this, but I can't figure out how to, Eurydice?
Oh, Eurydice. Yeah.
Eurydice.
Okay. That was, they do this thing called the Bake Off, and they take a play, and they have three different directors direct a portion of that play, and then they have a contest of whose concept, you know, was the best received kind of thing.
Right.
And in our segment and version of Eurydice, she was transported back to this nightmarish version of her childhood, and me and two other stones. Because there's the stones in the play there. We were the dolls that had come alive in her room, and we were slightly demonic,
yeah.
And you know, and often comical,
yeah.
But you know, we just sort of circled her and threw in our words from time to time, and
yeah.
You know, it was weird, and I like weird.
Yeah.
It was really, really well, weird.
Well, portraying a demented doll, a clown,
yeah.
Sounds pretty. Sounds right up your alley.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Excellent. Yep. And so, how did you get involved with them? Where did the inspiration come to say, I think I'll act now?
Well, that came from the initial class, right?
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I couldn't get enough of it. So, like, once. I thought I was going in to find ideas to paint, right?
Right.
Still haven't painted. It's been like since 2009. Still haven't painted anything new. But, you know, suddenly I had a different canvas to work with. I had like characters that I could pull into stuff. And like I had all these other experiences that I could put into characters. And it was kind of cool. Like it was kind of cool putting these things up. And so I would just audition for things that came up, and it
just
was
threw yourself in there.
Yeah, that is pretty much how I operate. You know, yeah. there's not a
you throw yourself in, and then you can fret about it and worry about it later.
Oh, totally.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's funny because that's how my nerves work. I don't get pre-stage fright. I get post-stage fright.
I was just thinking the very same thing.
Yeah.
Because my band played a show last weekend, and I was, like, not nervous the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, this will be fun, whatever. We'll just get up there in front of a bunch of strangers and yeah. play music that I wrote or that we wrote with the band. And then you're right. It wasn't until the day after. I was like, oh, my God, I did that in front of people.
I know. What did I do?
Now they all know.
Exactly.
Now they know I do the what? I don't know what it is they know, but now they know it. Yeah.
Totally.
It's too true. You're listening to Vermont Favorites on WBTV LP Burlington 99.3. I'm talking with Don Cherie McKenzie, who is a Burlington-based singer, dancer, and actor, and erstwhile painter, and what?
And model.
A model.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. You've done some modeling?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. How did that come about?
Just happened to... Somebody said they needed, you know, they were looking for models for their clothing line. And it was a fellow dancer in her.
Oh, yeah. Wings of Sin.
Wings
right?
of Sin. Yeah.
Okay. Now
that's one
that's
of
right.
them.
I've seen those now.
There's also, you know, you when you're with a lot of artistic people, there's always something that comes up, and you know, you get to know a lot of different people, and so different photographers are looking for ways to present their art, and they're always looking for models. But this particular Wings of Sin, she is a very tall, slender lady and gorgeous, and most of the ladies that she works with are these very tall, slender dancer
and this
types.
Is Melanie Patini.
Yeah. Yep. And she makes really beautiful stuff. Like, it's some of my favorite things to wear. And we were talking, and I was like, well, you know, like, I'm pretty curvy. Curvy is a kind way to put it. Yep. And I'm like, can you make that in my size? And she's like, I never thought of that way. And she goes, sure. Well, if I make that in your size and you have to model it. And I said, sold. So
there you go.
So she made this really beautiful long skirt and this poncho with, she likes using a lot of runic symbols and stuff like that. And so I got to be a model.
Yeah. Like you were saying earlier, the art, if you're an artist, if you have that obsession and compulsion in you, you're going to do it, whether, you know, however it comes out, you know, whatever someone needs, you know, you'll do it.
Yeah.
And it's great that you're open to the experience of, you need me to sing something, I'll sing something. You need me you need me to be on stage and be a creepy doll. I can do that.
I'm all over that.
I got your number. Too true. So that leads right into singing and writing music. You play with a band called Sugar.
Yeah.
I've seen you guys several times now.
Aw.
I love it.
Thank you.
How did that band come together?
Oh, wow. Sugar has actually been in many incarnations. And I was watching, like, I would be in the audience listening to my husband's band, and at the time he was with a band called Longford Row, and singing along with them, and sometimes going up on stage and singing with them, and remembering how much fun I had singing. Like, it was really, like, it really speaks to me. And so I started practicing or playing guitar, and my husband showed me a couple of chord shapes, and so I really started, you know, digging down and learning how to play guitar. And in those moments, in those beginning moments, because I've only been playing guitar for like 4 years now, so I accidentally wrote a song.
And funny how that works, right?
Yeah. And it was like, I really liked it. Like, I will leave it up to people to figure out whether they like my stuff or not, or whether it speaks to them.
That's not your job.
No. But I have a story to tell and something to say. And that was, you know, when I put that song together, I liked it. Like, I really, really liked it. And that the first one I wrote was my own kind of cool.
Oh, okay.
That came from a poem I wrote in the 90s because people were teasing me because I almost always wear black.
Yeah.
So I was getting like just rammed for not being colorful and blah, blah, blah. And I wrote this poem called I'm My Own Kind of Cool, and it was very angry and whatever, but I turned it into a song. And
yeah, well, that song, I was just listening to it the other day. It is, I guess the lyrics on their own could be seen as angry, but you don't deliver them as angry.
No, because I'm not mad no more. Right. I was mad when I wrote the poem.
It's still true.
Yeah.
It's still every bit true, but you've kind of flipped it on its head because it kind of has that kind of chill sound of like the band or Janis Joplin or like Tracy Chapman, Joan Osborne, kind of groovy blues kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's definitely a proud, I definitely felt the pride in the delivery of that.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, you get to a point where you stop offering an explanation for who you are or who you aren't, and you're just your own. And that's what that song is about. So it's like I took my own anger, and it was like, through that, I guess me and other weirdos understand, like, you know, you get to the point where you're just like, okay, I'm not explaining why. I have a girlfriend who is so very goth. She's awesome, but she's not the norm looking goth.
Right.
But she has to explain that all the time. And she changes things about, you know, like her hair and her makeup. And it's like, you get to the point when you're like, I'm not offering an explanation. What? My expressions of myself are not about you. Mm. So that's where that song...
But you still need to express them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so that's where that song came from. But yeah, I found out that I accidentally wrote this song, and it was just like, oh yeah. And all of a sudden, that anxiety thing got quiet. Like, as I was singing, it got really kind of peaceful in my head, which is rare. Because my brain goes like 60 miles a minute, and it never shuts up until there's music. That's where I started. And I thought, well, I want to play with other people, because I don't know, there's something about putting your voice with others and your music with other people. It's a shared thing, and it becomes... It makes it more special. Does that make sense? Like it's
totally does. Like, yeah, because it's more than it's just you.
Exactly. It's not just about me.
Yeah. Ironically, there's also that kind of validating energy to it. You know, even though you're not looking for that.
Totally.
But the fact that I found three or four other people who get what I'm trying to say.
Right.
And they're going to help me say it even louder.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
You know, I don't mean like the volume on the amp louder, but just. The message becomes bigger and louder.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly right. Yeah. There was a guitar player in Longford Row who wanted to go in a different direction. And so he was leaving Longford Row, and he came on board with me. Yeah. And that is Dan Blondin. And he's really, really phenomenal and very, very supportive. And like, first of all, my bandmates are awesome.
They got a good bunch.
They are. They're great. And they really support me. And they really encourage, you know, all my little creative whims. And, you know, oh, let's take off and go this direction today, guys. And they're just like, okay, let's do it.
That's the right kind of band.
Yeah.
The right kind of bandmates is the ones that, you know, they have of course, the ability, but, you know, they'll learn what you want them to learn.
Yeah.
But they're also open to saying, okay, maybe that's not what we're going to do today. Maybe we're going to do something different. But let's just see where Don Cherie's going with this.
Right. I always get the, well, what if we tried this instead?
I have no idea what you're talking about. That's never happened to me in my band. And then you got Gavin Greenwalt.
Gavin, I answered an ad because we needed some bass in our sound. And it, like, didn't realize it at first, but it was really good because he came on board. And he's the youngest of us, being only in his 20s, and he's the only grown up because we're not going to do it. But he's such a laid back guy, but very he's good at his craft, and he's very dedicated, and he's very multi genre kind of guy. He can pretty much fit in anywhere.
Yeah. And then on drums.
And then on drums is my co-writer, Joe Netzel. And this guy is phenomenal. Like, if you need a beat, Joe.
Yeah.
You know, he's good folk.
Yeah, as you know, people listening might not know, but I've played with him a few times. And yeah, having your songs are rooted in like that guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Folky tradition, but having a strong rhythm section of Gavin and Joe adds a whole other layer. It never pulls away from your song, the core of the song.
Right.
It only adds to it, and it adds like this primal energy to what you set out to do.
Totally.
So the next song I want to ask you about.
Okay.
You know what is going to be Chaos Incarnate, which
yeah,
which is a very strong rhythm section behind you.
Yeah,
but at the same time, you could just as easily be sitting there strumming it, just you and the guitar, and it would still be there, and it would be equally, though differently, powerful. But to have the whole band, all four of you, leaning into Chaos Incarnate, which has like the strong tom-tom rhythm, mm-hmm. and you know, just a full sound all around, and it becomes Chaos Incarnate. How did that song come together?
Oh my God. Once again, and this might seem like a pattern, something happened and I was really angry. Like I was frustrated and angry and stuck. I think like one of the lines in the song is I got a story and I need to tell it while I'm feeling stuck. And I was sometimes like, if I had upset enough, I just have to go away, because then I'm just no good to anybody. So I just have to go away and go be by myself. And so I'm just like strumming the two chords on the guitar, just mad as hell. And that's where that came from. And then the words came. Like I'm just strumming these two chords, and the words came. And so I recorded them on it's like one of those little handheld guys. Cause I didn't know, like I didn't really know I was going to make a song out of it. I just kind of thought it was kind of interesting, and it almost sounded like I was babbling. And then I got this picture in my head of just somebody that's so angry inside that they're just not even making sense anymore. Like they're, you know, that how they, you have an angel and a devil on your shoulder, according to cartoons.
Yeah.
Like, what if the wheels came off and they both lost the plot and they were both, you know, telling you to lose it?
Yeah.
And so chaos is about that, when you're just ready to burn it down.
the refrain is, I feel like chaos incarnate and I want to do wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a destructive song.
It is.
And yet uplifting somehow.
Well, we've all been there. Yeah. I mean, just, you know, folks stuck in traffic, I kind of feel like, you know, there's some deep-seated stuff that comes out when you're stuck in traffic. But, you know, we've all been there.
True story. Let me ask you another favorite Vermont question.
Sure.
Who is your favorite Vermonter?
Oh my God, I have so many favorite Vermonters. Vermont has been very welcoming to me, and very, I have a really cool community of folks that I know. But there's a lady named Beth Barnt who is, she's a comedian and she's an actress and she's a painter, and she used to ride motorcycles, and she's really, I mean, as cool chicks go, she's amazing. She makes a series of postcards every season, you know, just out of strips of paper and, you know, painting things. It's just, she's just got, her vision is just incredible. And it's nothing by rote. It's all like, I'm trying not to use the word abstract, but I like when things are a little bit distorted, because I like the idea that the concept of reality that we've all agreed to is fluid. I like that idea. You know what I mean? Because then that takes away.
Certainly makes it more interesting.
Yeah. Well, that means we're not really stuck here. We can make this what we want to. So there's a way we can make things better. Anyway, Beth Barnt is amazing. I call her Barn Cat, but she was the first person I met on my own here in Vermont. And she was the I arrived at the bashful beginner class second. She was there when I got there, and that was the first person I met. And she is amazing, and she is a sister woman of mine now.
Yeah, you definitely sounds like a kindred spirit.
Yeah,
that you found.
Yeah, yeah.
No shortage of those in Vermont.
And she is definitely rebellious and very opinionated, and she's a woman after my own heart.
Excellent. Excellent. I want to ask you about one other song from the EP that's online right now.
In the Raw,
Soul Travelers.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me where that came from. It's very, you know, as in the title, very soulful. And, you know, it pulls in a lot of that influence that I could definitely sense from what you told me about what you were listening to in your house growing up.
Uh-huh.
But with your own slant on it.
Soul Travelers. Do you remember the movie Beasts of the Southern Wild, if you've ever seen that one?
Can't say I have. Tell me about that.
It was about these Bayou families somewhere in Louisiana that were, I mean, they were just flat out, they were not city folk. They were out in the bayous, and that is how they have this whole culture. And this one strong little girl and her story and her journey. And there was a flood. And the resilience of these people, like, they were tough. Like, tough like I, you know, sort of remember my grandma talking about her father and their family. Like, tough like that, where, you know, like me, if I stub my toe. No,
yeah.
It's not that bad, but you know what I mean? Like they definitely had a way of being self-sufficient, and they, you know, here's, you know, the city's worried about the flood, and they're kind of like, okay, so basically we're going to do what we did in, you know, 20 years ago, and they got their plan down. And anyway, Soul Travelers came out of overcoming. When I saw that movie, I was moved, and the first line, have you ever tried to breathe underwater? That's rose up over your head. It's about resilience. It's about overcoming stuff that's always coming at you. I mean, this is life.
Yeah. It's a timely message, and it's a timeless message, especially these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the way I met you was through dance.
Yep.
I ended up, my wife is in Lenanshi with you.
Yep.
So you are and I guess you've done some other things, but how did dance come into the picture for you? So after theater, after painting, excuse me, and after music, I mean, you're still doing, you know, the music. What made you say, oh, and I'm going to dance too?
Because by that time the drug had taken root.
Yeah.
And saying yes to myself is like very natural for me now.
Yeah.
And I was at a festival or a concert, one of the two. And there were these improv, sort of belly dance, tribal improv people led by a woman whose name is Suzanne Claxton, who is now Dr. Suzanne Claxton. And I saw them on stage, and the way they moved, it was incredible. And it was very syncopated and very dark and mysterious, and all of these movements that, I don't know, it called to me. And so they came down into the audience, and they were dancing amongst us, and I was trying to learn how to do what they do. And I had been drinking. And there's a Jen Usher was dancing with them. I think it was Jen and Suzanne and Chrissy. And they were, or maybe it was Felicia. I think there were only three of them anyway. But I kept grabbing Jen's skirt, trying to see what her feet and
while
her
she's,
legs
while she's
were doing
performing.
While she's, well, no, they weren't performing.
Oh, okay.
They were in amongst the audience. I would never do that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that. I'm not crazy. But
it would have been quite a story if you had.
Oh my God, yeah. How I ended up in jail by but yeah, so I was trying to like figure out what her feet were doing, and I know that now that that was probably maybe a little creepy. Because she didn't know me from Adam. She was like, she was very, you know, she was giggling about it. And now we laugh about that. And it's it's really funny. But
and she's in Lenanshi.
She is in Lenanshi.
Worth pointing out to our listeners.
Yeah, yeah. She's awesome. She's my dance sisters are also my sisters. And I love them so much. So we started taking, well, we, the Royal We, started taking Suzanne's class and met your Kate.
Yeah.
And Julie Marshall and Jen, I met later because Jen lives further away in Rutland. But we took that class and we all met in class. And when Suzanne moved away, we decided to keep going and performing together because we loved the dance and we really.
Well, tell everyone a bit about tribal belly dance because it's belly dance, you know, we've seen it before, but the tribal aspect and also the improvisational aspect, which is what blew my mind when I first saw it. I was like, you mean you don't have everything choreographed?
Right.
How is that? And you're all doing it at the same time, which is fascinating.
Well, it's definitely Suzanne's style of things. And before I say belly dance, because belly dance is a particular type of thing that's performed by folks that, you know the history of the dance and the history of the people where the dance came from, that sort of thing.
Right.
So ours is influenced by belly dance, but not technically it.
I gotcha.
And it's American tribal, which is kind of, it pulls from different styles of the original thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the improv part comes from the fact that we are going off of, there's usually somebody that's leading it. One of us is taking the lead somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And there are cues, but that are verbal or motion.
Right. So there's like a little hand up in the air or a yip or a certain kind of yowl.
Yeah. You know, and then we know sort of what's coming next, but we don't. Like it's all, you keep your eye, kind of that side eye on that person, you know, whoever is.
It's almost like the band leader saying, and we're in A.
Yeah.
And we're in D.
Or in my case, we are in Capo 1.
Yeah, Capo 1. But calling it out and be ready for the changes.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's in itself, it makes you pay attention to each other. And it's also, it can be very unique and it can be intermixed with choreography, which we do quite frequently in Lenanshi because we do theatrical things as well, as you know, because you've created some of the music that went along with us. We were conjuring.
Yeah, the Art of Horror that you did last year was, well, the last few years that I saw. It's always a stunning display of that combination of like you're acting out a scene through pantomime, for lack of a better word, and then but also mixing in this American tribal fusion dance into it, and it's really really an experience. I had to make sure I didn't lose track of where I was musically. You know, because I was busy watching what you guys were doing. So what's on the plan? What's the plan for Sugar, your band, and for Lenanshi moving forward?
Lenanshi, we are going to dance at the Steampunk Expo, which is November 4th, I think. I am so married to my calendar.
It's on there.
And if I don't have it in front of me.
But the Vermont Steampunk Expo.
Yeah.
I almost said Expo. Expo is, where is that?
Oh.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
I know, he totally put me on the spot.
I'm sure if you looked up Vermont Steampunk Expo, you'd find Expo.
Easy for you to say.
and then Sugar, you guys have any gigs around town booked?
Actually, we'll be at First Night at Contoy's.
Oh.
8 to 8:40.
Excellent.
This year.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to ask you a couple more Vermont favorites.
Yeah.
Your favorite Vermont memory, now that you've been here for a little while.
For all of 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, have such good memories. Like,
doesn't have to be the number one memory. A favorite Vermont memory.
Okay, so this is going to be really corny, but I swear. Yeah. When we moved here, he's since passed on. But when we moved here, we had a German Shepherd. Yeah. His name was Brutus, and because we came from Florida. Yeah. And he, when we got him, we were in Florida. He had never seen snow ever, and it freaked him out. And he wouldn't go to the bathroom. Like, we literally had to dig a tunnel. And that was that year, you know, when we first got back, the year the snow came down and it was crazy deep.
Yeah.
And so we literally had to dig this, you know, tunnel in our backyard so he would walk out there, because I think when the first time he stepped into the snow and he sunk,
yeah,
he was like, nope, and no, we're done. Like, I will never pee again. No.
How old was he?
Oh, he had to be like maybe 5 or 6,
yeah,
maybe, so something like that. So he was
pretty set.
He was settled into the, you yeah know, the ground is solid and this is what we do. And yeah, that completely threw him. But something happened while he was out there, you know, taking care of business. And I don't know. I think he fell in it. And he landed, went down a little bit, as you do in snow. And then, you know, it obviously it stopped because it's still ground. Right. And he figured that out. And he, at that point, he started bouncing around in the snow like a bunny. And if you could picture a German Shepherd doing this, it was not graceful.
No.
And you know, from that point on, whenever he smelled snow, he would get to bark excitedly and he would get really, really happy. And that always made me happy and feel warm, because he's out there shoveling snow and my dog is barking and wanting you to throw snowballs at him. When he started out with this just absolute terrified, but yeah, that's
I'm glad it's a snow memory. Yeah. That's one of my favorite things about Vermont, though I know not everyone agrees. Last question.
Okay.
Your favorite Vermont food?
Oh my God, cider donuts.
Good answer.
So bad, but cider donuts.
Where do you
are
like
awesome
to get your cider donuts?
God, I can't. Is that an answer?
There's no shortage.
I can't remember like which is the favorite, but I know every single time I've had them or someone's yeah brought them, they're so good. And I think the only place I can think of is City Market, but
yeah,
there are others.
There's so many. I was just looking at some pictures of Kate and me, and I was sending them to my mom just to say, hey, we're still around.
Yeah.
And I found this one picture of the two of us, and we had just stopped in, I'm going to forget the name of the town now.
Mm-hmm.
It was on one of our 251 journeys, and it was one of those towns in the middle of nowhere, but we stopped at a convenience store, and they had cider donuts.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Like that.
You can't be so far from civilization that you're not within arm's reach of a cider donut.
Yeah.
So on that note, I think we'll stay in Vermont, you know, despite the long winters.
Right.
You'll always have that. So tell me, where can people find you online through for your band, For Sugar?
For Sugar, you can find us at thebandsugar.com. You can find us on Facebook. We like to be liked, so like us a lot.
Yeah. And Lenanshi?
Lenanshi, we are on Facebook as well. And let me spell that, because that's an odd one. Lenanshi yeah are actually, it's a fairy thing. They're fae.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And decidedly evil. But it is Leanan.
Yeah.
And Sidhe.
Lenanshi.
Lenanshi. And you can find us on Facebook there.
Excellent. Well, I've been talking with Dawn Cherie McKenzie, and I want to thank you for listening to Vermont Favorites on WBTV LP. Talk to you soon. Take care.